What's up, everybody? 1, 2, 3. This is MGC. I'm here with my co-hosts.
Here I am, Mr. Mike, ready to go.
And we're here representing the Circle of Debate podcast. You know, today, I'm taking the role of the host of today's interview. Of course, we usually have Ivan hosting this, but like, you know, this is like the side thing whenever Chris does his own stuff and things like that. And we have a very special guest with us today. You know, introduce yourself, sir.
Hello, I'm Dino Wales, the next household name.
Ooh, there we go. There we go. And I feel that coming on. And, you know, Dino, you are a boxer and you are a filmmaker, correct?
Yeah, a retired boxer and currently a filmmaker, yes.
Retired boxer. Yeah, and you know, we'll have more questions on like a little bit of the technical of boxing, because our podcast regularly, you know, of course we cover entertainment, we cover pro wrestling, we cover mixed martial arts, we cover, you know, music, you know, and you also said you dabble in music too, so I'm also curious about that, to ask questions about that as well. So, and also like you're on TikTok. You're a pretty funny guy. You're a bit of a joker on there.
Thank you.
I was like, ooh, girl, you ain't got no booty. What's going on? I saw that, those clips. But so I guess we'll open up with this question, you know, in tradition with Ivan. How'd you get your start with filmmaking and what got you interested in, you know, making movies and films and acting in general?
Well, I thought about acting when I was young. Actually, my mom done some theater here and there, but I was watching Poltergeist once and I saw the little kid that plays Robbie, his acting in that, in my opinion, when I was young, I looked at that, said, I can do the same thing.
I want to back.
And that's what made me want to get into acting. I didn't get into filmmaking until I had no thoughts or inkling of filmmaking until like 1996, like towards the end of my boxing career. Because what my goal was to fight as an amateur all the way until I go to the Olympics, win the Olympics, turn pro, win a couple of belts, retire, and go into film with the accolades of world champion. But it didn't turn out that way. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get a chance to fight in the Olympics. I didn't make the Olympics. So I stepped away from boxing and got into film a little later after I stepped away from boxing. So, but that's what made me want to get into film, was just the telling stories and just being a part of telling stories and people seeing the story that you write. That's really why I got into film.
And what kind of led to the decision to make that documentary, the movie, When the Bell Rings? Like, what led up to that? Why did you decide to shoot that period of your life?
I actually thought about filming When the Bell Rings back in 2001 when I was 30. I wanted to do When the Bell Rings then, but I had people who wasn't serious and filming my return, I had people shucking and jiving me, so it never came to fruition. So I dabbled in film, doing production stuff here and there on a bunch of movies and TV shows, working as an extra, featured extra, and as well as a doing production assistant stuff and getting out of shape and, you know, missing boxing, you know, thinking about my goals, unfinished as a boxer, and, you know, taking time away from my kids and stuff. And just got into film and did my journey in that and got depressed and out of shape and wishing what I would have done in boxing if I would turn pro. So that's why I said, let me just film this journey. So working on the Spirit Awards, I met Brad Boris, the director of When the Bell Rings, and told him my life story. And I was at the lowest point of my life at that time too. So, and told him about it, and he said, I'll film your story. I didn't believe him in the beginning.
Did most of that take place in South L.A., in Los Angeles?
Yeah, we filmed the beginning part in L.A., and then we went to Minnesota, Chicago, Alabama, which a lot of that stuff was not in the documentary. Like, a lot of stuff we filmed didn't make the cut, but at the same time, it's still a good cut for what they got together. They cut out a lot of stuff. So, but you know, we've started filming and it led to winning 4 awards and
that's incredible.
It didn't hit like I wanted though. I thought it was gonna be a little bit more. I thought it was gonna get more commercial or get more publicity. But right now, I consider it, and a couple of people consider it a cult classic. If you read the comments that's on the Amazon, it makes me feel good. Even the 2 negative comments they have on there, it was still you get a positive out that negative. So. And I take a positive out of the 2 little, only out of all the good comments on there is only 2 negative ones, and I still got a positive out of those negative ones. So, you know, it touched a lot of people. I get messages all the time in my TikTok, Facebook, Instagram about people being inspired by my story. So, you know, it makes me feel good to get that.
You know, Dino, like I got to say, one of the underlying themes of that movie, I got to say, probably has to be fatherhood. And the funny thing is, the weirdest coincidence, I was watching your movie like just 40 minutes ago with my dad, and my dad's just in the other room, so I could see that, like, you know, father-son relationships is kind of like the thing of that theme in that movie. And I'm watching that with my dad, and, you know, I'm Filipino, so boxing is kind of like big in our culture, you know, as well. I mean, Matt, we've got Manny Pacquiao and Donato.
I think Donito's in there.
Daenerys. So Nonito. So like we've got all that going on. But I don't want to dominate like the questions. I know I wanted to get that in there just because, you know. But Mike, just a little bit.
Yeah, I'm actually curious about your boxing career. How did you get started? And you mentioned that you only did amateur. Did you think about going pro?
Yeah, I turned pro. It's all documented in a documentary. You have to check out When the Bell Rings to see the entire journey. When I did my first professional fight, I turned pro at 40. And it was an interesting process to get back in shape to do that. But I started boxing actually seriously when I was 19. But my mom, boyfriend, introduced me to boxing when I was 5 and gave me some boxing gloves autographed by Sugar Ray Robinson. And he used to show me some things here and there when I was a kid, but then when they broke up, I didn't have no more boxing. He didn't teach me anything else or didn't come around anymore. And my mama wasn't into combat sports. She didn't want me to play no football. She didn't want me to box. She didn't want me to do none of that stuff. She wanted me to play baseball. That's all she wanted me to do. But I didn't play baseball. I didn't want to play baseball. All I wanted to do was box and play football. And I didn't do that until later.
What weight class?
I fought at 160, started off at 160 middleweight, and then I fought at 165 and 172 light heavyweight. It was interesting, you know, my record as an amateur was 67 wins, 13 losses with, I had like 36 knockouts, but not, I actually out of 36, I probably put to sleep 11 of them. The rest of them,
that's awesome.
I mean, I gotta say, one of the fight in the film, the stuff like that, you can't really plan because it's like, you know, it really added a lot to the drama and like kind of the emotion in the film, like that last fight, you know. You know, I mean, you can't really, like Mike, I can't really spoil it for you, but I gotta say, because I mean, you know, obviously, you know, the hero of the story is, you know, right in front of us. You know, and just the fact that it's a documentary, it's a real life one, you know, I'm like, wow, I'm about to talk to the person in the film in like 40 minutes. I'm like, so it just kind of, I don't know, it just feels a little bit more surreal. But yeah, like it really happened like that. It was like a win and then somebody just wrote it down kind of like Steve Harvey saying the wrong names. You know, there was like a mix up at the end and
don't give it all up now. Let them watch it.
Yeah, no, I'm very intrigued. Yeah.
So but I gotta say, with the boxing, what was there any like lasting injuries, you know, from either from when your early days or your
late days? I got shot when I was 20. So in my jabbing arm. So I actually fought through that when I was back then. I fought with my arm hurt, with probably 30, 40 fights. You know what I mean? And that gave me long-term damage as I got older. Like, I'm 50 now, and I'm suffering from the long-term damage from that. But at the same time, you know, I love the sport of boxing. You know, the every aspect of it. You know, I was a dominating defensive, offensive and defensive fighter with speed, good defense, didn't get touched much. You know, I did the little shoulder roll things, but my version of it, not like what Mayweather do or the Philly Shell type. You know, I was fast, I had good defense, very technical, ring savvy was off the chain. And then doing when the bell rings, trying to get that back, being a big guy, there's many times I wanted to quit, but there was no quitting me, you know what I'm saying? So throughout that journey of getting back in shape, losing the weight to fight at 175, and trying to at least bring back some of what I had when I was young, you know, it was a reality that, you know, father time takes a toll, has a toll on you. You know, father time is undefeated. So
and you know, that's kind of a question I was asking myself the whole time when, you know, you're fighting through that gunshot wound, you know, from the past. It's I'm wondering if, like, that's always like, if you're an opponent, knows about that, has he always, like, studied you, he researches that, and I'm like, all right, this guy's got an Achilles heel, maybe I could use that against him or something. Like have fighters actually, like, researched you and found out about that and tried to use that as, like, oh, he's got a weakness, how about I, like, aim for
actually, my dad, it wasn't a weakness in my amateur days. You know, I got popped in the arm, but I didn't have the limitations that I have now. When I was in my 40s, now in my 50s, I didn't have that then. Although I had suffered through the pain afterwards, you know, I can still maneuver my arm like a complete jab like this. Yeah, I can't do it with this one all the way out because I got a little curve.
Hit it.
But at the same time, I didn't have that problem back then. Like I said, over the time and years and the wear and tear, the limitation of my jab was weak. I could fight southpaw. If I ever want to fight again, I'd fight southpaw because my right hand, I can do a good jab. It's just if I throw my left, it would be boo-boo. I won't have no power on it like I want it. But at the same time, no, when you have fighters fight, they knew came in there and they was probably worn out because they know they're going to get beat up and beat down. I didn't fight. Once I went on a good winning streak, 17, 18 fight winning streak, and a lot of stoppages, I wouldn't get much fights. I had to go out of state to get fights. Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, all throughout the, you know, around the state of Illinois, you know, other cities outside of Illinois. I couldn't get no fights in Chicago, so Wisconsin, you know what I mean? Just the Midwest, I wouldn't get fights like I wanted. So in Chicago, it was cool though. And then going down south to fight down in Columbus and training at Holyfield Arena in Atlanta when he had his gym open at the time, in Columbus, and you know, it was a beautiful thing. Minnesota, you know, training at Circle of Discipline boxing gym, which was a outstanding rebirth to my career at that time. You know, because I went through a lot back then.
The other thing I was kind of curious about was, like, because I looked up the independent award, and it was the 2014 Louisiana. You know, what was that award ceremony like? You know, was it a very, you know, like, you know, was there a lot of different, like, the other, was it just like it was number one out of, like, all of the independent films in Louisiana, or?
Yeah, we actually is the New Orleans Film Festival.
Orleans.
We won. Our first award was the New Orleans Film Festival, and it was a beautiful experience. It was a surreal experience. We went against some other great documentaries, especially this one documentary about Charity Hospital, which is a very prestigious hospital in New Orleans. And actually they won as well, but they didn't win the grand jury like we did. And it was a beautiful thing, you know, and winning that festival, it was a good experience. winning that one in New York was awesome as well, the Buffalo Niagara. We won second-tier festivals. We didn't win the top-tier festivals. We didn't even get invited to the top-tier festivals. So
I got to say winning period, though, getting number one anywhere. You know?
Right. And then being the best feeling I had throughout this whole experience is being honored by the WBC, getting my belt, and all the accolades that a champion gets, except for the money part, but getting all the accolades that a champion get when they become world champion, it was a beautiful thing, getting honored as a world champion by the WBC during the screening of When the Bell Rings in LA. So it was awesome.
One thing I noticed from that film is that you're very, you know, of course it's a very like sad point in your life, lowest point of your life. But in that film, but I think one of the things I didn't see, of course, you're in a very different place in your life right now. One of the things I didn't see is like the kind of like the joker and the kind of, you know, the your humorous side of you that I see on TikTok. And, you know, like I guess
I had to develop that. I had to really develop that, not to cut you off. I had to really develop that humor. I mean, coming up was a dark element. Going through some trying times, you know, coming up with a fatherless home and going through some things with my mom and going through the trials and tribulations that I was going through with my kids' moms and all that stuff. So, yeah, a little humor was there, but I would turn all the darkness I went through and just make light of it, make fun of it, make it out of it. Not like, I guess,
it's your life. So
yeah, I mean, makes it like comedians do it, and I've done some stand-up. Before, man, that's one of your questions, you know.
Yeah,
I've done stand up before. When I was living in LA, I did, you know, a couple of stand up gigs, but it wasn't like nothing major or anything, like a little five minute sets here, a couple of
giving it a try,
you know, I did good first. I didn't bomb. I mean, my first one was lackluster here and there, and I got better as I went, but I didn't take it serious because at that time I was going through a dark time and I really was going through financial issues and stuff like that, and I needed to make money. And I said doing it for free was not a road I wanted to go through to take. If I would have been patient and did that, I think I'd be on another level of comedy, but I didn't really, at that time, my mind was somewhere else. I was, like I said, at a really dark place, and that's when the Bell Ring came, you know, getting the Spirit Awards, and, you know, I was almost borderline homeless at that time. I was almost borderline homeless again. That was crazy.
I noticed Skid Row before,
huh?
I was just saying I noticed that nowadays you made it like because you made it such like a 180 because you're on TikTok now, and like what kind of led from after that movie to like nowadays that you're on TikTok and you're making other films nowadays, and you're awesome, you know.
Well, TikTok. I'm always on social media. I've been a social media fanatic since social media been in existence with the MySpaces and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I had all, and I'm on probably most of the main social media platforms that everybody uses except Snapchat. I have a Snapchat, but I don't be on it like that. I thought it's for more teeny boppers than anything. Man, TikTok. I saw a commercial on TV and I saw the effects and stuff on it. And I looked at it and I was like, man, that's funny. TikTok, huh? I've been hearing about TikTok. And I remember being on Loudly. What's the other one it used to be called? TikTok was something Musically. I was on Musically first, but I wasn't on it serious like that because I was doing Triller at the time. Triller, which is now still big. I still have a Triller account, but I don't be on it like that because TikTok take a lot of my time, you know?
And I see your updates because I'm on there. I'm on there a lot too.
Yeah, I met a lot of good people on TikTok. I don't mean we're kind of distant now. But now a lot of them moved over to Lively, and I want to get more into Lively, but I'm just more TikTok is the thing. I think we are mutual friends with one of them.
Lucky
Simmons. Yes, Lucky, awesome guy. You know, real busy. Lucky was inspired me a lot as well with being live and speaking on social media. And now he's over at on Livid doing his thing, and I'm very impressed at what he's doing. And
that's where I met him. I met him on Livid, so yeah. He was number two 1 week, too, out of all the U.S. streamers. He was, like, number two in all the U.S. So, yeah.
See, he's a beast, and I need to get on Livid and promote myself more on that. But I could see the difference with Livid and TikTok, and I could see how Lucky has grown from TikTok to Livid and how he's excelled, and I'm quite impressed with that.
Mike. Interesting. Yeah, well, I wanted to ask about how you went about putting together your film. You mentioned that you were going through some financial stuff. How did you plan it out, and how did you actually go about making it happen?
Well, meeting Brad Boris, I was living in Culver City, California, living in a hotel on unemployment, and meeting Brad doing the Spirit Awards, told him about the documentary. And like I told you, when he said he'll shoot my life story, when I told him I used to box, because at that time I was 260 pounds, big and out of shape. And I told him I used to box, and he was like, "What, you used to box?" Like, everybody like laughed at me because I used to be big. I mean, I'm big, and you know, boxers aren't big and out of shape, you know, with big stomach, beer belly, two beer bellies almost, you know, it looked like. But Brad said, "I'm gonna film your life story. You find a gym, get yourself back in shape. I'm gonna film the whole process." I said, okay, cool. I didn't believe him at first. Found a gym, started working out. He didn't come the first day, but he came the second day, which the first day I was like, "Wow, he's full of shit." Excuse me, I don't know if I'm supposed to cuss. My bad.
Oh, you can. Yeah.
Okay, I thought he was full of shit. But when he came the second day, I was impressed. And he came and he's like, "Look, I'm going to film your whole process." And we was filming in the gym, me working out, jumping, running, hitting the bags, getting beat up, sparring. And he's like, "Man, it got to be more than this. I want to do more. I want to film." He used it out of his pocket. He used his entire savings to film When the Bell Rings until we met Metta World Peace. Well, he met Metta World Peace or got connection with Metta World Peace. And then they came on and did extra funding for it and got the promotions for it. Metta World Peace, the basketball player,
right,
Ron Artest. So I didn't meet him until I came to California. I met him and shook his hand and everything. But, you know, he just came on for the promotion part, you know, a publicity stunt for him, for his company, you know, and he promoted for the few months that he did, and that was it. But at the same time, Brad just came in and he had faith in. And there was a lot of trials and tribulations. There was times where the documentary wouldn't have got finished because, you know, he ran out of funds. We did a crowdfund campaign. We did that barely, made it barely on the last day. And still, we pushed and went through medical, trying to get my medicals to fight as a pro, which you checked that, all that's in the documentary, you know, trying to get my medicals and everything. It was just a lot of shucking and jiving. I was getting pushed around and, you know, the negative energy I was getting from different people in the beginning, it was just a lot of stuff that went into play to get that documentary finished. And my wife today, who's in the documentary, she wasn't my girlfriend at the time. She was somebody I used to talk to back in the 80s. We went to school together, and she found me on Facebook right before we started filming the documentary. And we started conversing, and she actually helped save the documentary. When he was about to go compete, Brad was about to cut it. Say, it's too much time to, I mean, I need to do some other stuff. But it didn't, you know, my wife, she found the way to get it done, and we got it done. And as for other projects, you know, I'm a filmmaker. I'm a screenwriter, actually. And me and my wife, we started a film company called Ambient Path Entertainment, which is no funds right now. Work on filming two movies. I want to film a movie, a TV show, and a short next year. A short called 12, and a TV show pilot called Gnarly Fills. That's the two projects, my passion project. Actually, I have other projects that put more passion behind it, but this TV pilot, you know, it hadn't nothing like that on TV since The Wire or Top Boy, which is the London version of The Wire. You know, in my opinion, I think Top Boy is the London version of The Wire. But at the same time, I just have stories. I like telling good stories. And it's just a beautiful thing being in film and seeing all the being around all the crew and celebrities I met over the time. And just that journey in general was a beautiful thing. You know, right now, I hadn't been in anything since 2015. I hadn't done nothing film-wise since 2015, since I did Same Kind of Different as Me, which is my first speaking part in a major motion picture. I hadn't done nothing since then. I've been really just trying to find my way into getting my foot back in the film career door with my film, with 12, which I met several people on TikTok, lucky included, to be a part of 12 as executive producer and a crew of people of the GTV family, where we can get 12 shot next year.
And then I wouldn't mind PAing for you if you're ever in LA.
That's my end game, is to move back to LA. And I hope to move back to LA soon. You know,
that was actually my next question was, like, which city do you most consider calling home?
Chicago is home always, but you know, I miss LA. You know, I lived in New Orleans most of my childhood, so New Orleans. Shout out to all the bosses in New Orleans. Shout out to all the gyms I trained at in New Orleans. Shout out to Coach Scooby. Shout out to Team Get You Right, New Orleans Boxing Club. Avondale Boxing Club and Terrell Boxing Club. New Orleans, Chicago, LA, Atlanta. Those are the cities that I love the most.
I think so.
Yeah. I'm curious because, you know, we've seen the rise of, for example, like mixed martial arts during that time while you were boxing. Have you ever had a curiosity of giving that a try or looking into that?
Yes. Yes. I, when I was out of shape and I was working, I was living in Riverside, California, with two good gentlemen that took me in, and there's a mountain that's called Mount Rubido in Riverside, and they used to run that thing every day. And I was like, man, these guys run this mountain, and they're running like 13 minutes. One of them running in 9 minutes, another one running 13 minutes. And I was like, man, the two brothers, they used to run this mountain. One 9 minutes, one 13 minutes. I'm like, man, these guys are off the chain. That's how I went and I did it one time, and it took me 36 minutes because that I was big and out of shape going up and down that mountain, 36 minutes, you know what I mean? And kept doing that mountain, determined, and my best time was 19 minutes. And I lost some weight, and I felt good. And it was just a good experience doing that. I don't know if I answered your question, but... that Riverside was off the chain. And you said you wanted to get into mixed martial arts. There was a gym in Riverside where my roommate, one of the brothers, he did jiu-jitsu. He was doing jiu-jitsu at this gym called Planet. I can't remember.
Tenth Planet.
Yes, he was. Yeah. Working at fighting at 10th Planet, out training at 10th Planet in Riverside. And I went there and I said, you know what? I want to give this MMA a chance. I want to try it. Because at that time, they had this MMA fighter out there that I really liked at the time. He had blonde hair. Dude was off the chain, knocking everybody out in the beginning. The white kid was a beast. I mean, I was impressed at his work. I can't remember his name, but he was off the chain. I don't hear much of him today, mm-hmm. But back then he was off the chain. I said, I want to try it out. Teach me some jujitsu, man. This guy, I'm trying to learn jujitsu at 38 years old. I'm like, man, I should have been doing this when I was young. This is crazy. I really want to get in there. I really want to do the MMA because I can do my stand up game. Well, right. My ground game is going to be boo-boo. If I get put on the ground, I'm going to be put to sleep. And it's not going to happen like that. So I said, you know what, I want to get back into boxing. And that's what I, at that point, when I was in Riverside, I said, I'm going to get back into boxing. And, you know, from Riverside and the Culver City and then that when the bell rings thing and all that. So, yeah, I did consider MMA one time.
What kind of music do you usually dabble in, since you said you like that's always been like a hobby for you? That's like that's another side of you we didn't really see too much. I'm kind of curious about
music. Well, the documentary on the showcase, it was showcasing the return to me getting back into boxing 15 years, and they didn't really dabble into my past, but the drama between me and my mom, and they kept it with the me and my dad and me and my son, the element of father and son thing. They didn't put all the other stuff in it, which, you know, it was cool. That would have been a 6-hour documentary if they would have.
a mini series, you know, about you.
They could have did that. They really could have done that. But they was thinking about a documentary because the rough cut of the documentary was actually 4.5 hours long. And they cut 4.5 hours into 82 minutes, so.
Yeah, I was surprised how short it was, though, because I was prepared for a 2-hour thing. I was like, I gotta finish, you know, washing my car and getting around to watching it, because I was thinking it was gonna be like 2 hours at least.
You know? Right. So. But I was into music. I would always listen to hip hop. I always listen to rock, rap, metal. I love all music, country. Some country, but I love country, blues, soul, all that. I love orchestrated music, and I love it all. And I listen to it all.
When I was wondering young. If they used any of your music in the film, though. If you ever like made any or recorded any?
No, they didn't. No, I wasn't working on music then at the time. But I did do some music when I was in New Orleans before, way before When the Bell Rings in the early 2000s, and then. Chicago when I was working on Prison Break and stuff. I just done some music then. I had a record label called Keeping the Gutter Records at one point, but that was an atrocious experience, and I said nah. I changed it to Keep Cranking Hit Records, and I just lost the love of doing music, trying to record people, because people at mine at that time was into that gangster rap, and I said, I don't want to do rap, gangster rap all the time. All that gnarly stuff coming out your mouth is just, I don't want to push that. I don't want to push that like that anymore. Now, I mean, in the beginning I was, because I lived that, but now I said, I don't want to push that. It's just crazy. So that's why I said, I don't want to deal with music anymore. I just want to do film. But I still make music now. I think I sent you one of my songs called It Is What It Is. Something I recorded last week. And, you know, I just dabble in music from time to time, especially when I get stressed and depressed. Work on some music here and there.
It always lifts the spirit and soothes the soul. I think we'll close out this interview with just the plug, because you have 12 upcoming. That's going to be, pretty excited to see that. I saw a little clip of it on Twitter. So far. So I scoured your Twitter, and, you know, tell us, you know, where we can find like 12 and, you know, when to expect it, or, you know, I know it's an ongoing project right now. And then and I think there was another passion project you were talking about.
Gnarly Feels, but that's another, that's going to take some time. You know, hopefully I can get Gnarly Feels in the work. And get 12 in the works, you know, to raise the money for it and get everything situated, and we can film that, you know, bring dreams to life. I'd say I'm 50 now, so I'm 50 and I want to be shucking and jiving and lallygagging and have a lull. I want to come out of this and just push forward and put good content out there for people to see. But if people want to find me, you can find me. Just go to aboutme.com/DinoWells. aboutme.com/DinoWells. That's where you can find all my social media content. You can find my trailer, my IMDb, all that stuff is on About Me. Or you can go to itsmyurls.com/DinoWells. That has all my stuff there as well. All my URLs.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in for this episode of Circle of Debate. And thank you, Dino Wells, for being here.
Thank you.
And, you know, this is incredible. Our first, you know, first with film and boxing, you know, the film was very emotional for, you know, great to watch, and it was great getting to know you, you know. So thank you everyone for tuning in. We'll hopefully, you know, I'd like to have you back for more stuff soon. So, all right, take care, everybody.